This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. Both of West Virginia Senators, Democrat Joe Manchin and Republican Shelley Moore Capito, are co-sponsors of a piece of legislation that would rewrite the 40-year-old Toxic Substances Control Act. Many believe that the bill has enough bipartisan support to pass through Congress. But as Clintus Board reports, many are questioning if the bipartisan compromise has resulted in a bill that makes an already toxic status quo worse.
The newly proposed federal legislation is meant to protect public health from toxic chemicals in a number of ways. It tries to ensure that cost considerations are not factors when determining if a chemical is safe or not. It also attempts to define and extend protections to vulnerable populations. The bill would require chemicals to have more stringent evaluations from the Environmental Protection Agency, and new chemicals can't be manufactured before that agency approves them. During an Environment and Public Works Committee meeting last week in Washington, Senator Capito pointed to last year's Freedom Industries spill in Charleston as a prime example of why the Toxic Chemical Safety Act, or TSCA, needs to be reformed.
I am a supporter of this bill. I'll say that from the outset. I do think that TSCA is not the primary law which would govern accidental spill into the water. But I think TSCA can be a useful resource in situations like the Elk River spill, and I'm pleased to be an original co-sponsor of this.
Last year, more than 300,000 residents in West Virginia went days without access to clean water after a chemical leak into the Elk River. At the time of this spill, it was almost entirely unknown how the chemical that leaked into drinking water supplies, crude MCHM, would affect exposed populations. It's not the only chemical that the public really doesn't know a lot about. Thousands of other understudied chemicals exist and are permitted to go to market under the current chemical law. Senator Manchin has been a proponent for the chemical reform bill since its introduction in 2013. He first testified in support of the bill 2 years ago when it was referred to as the Chemical Safety Improvement Act, or CSIA.
I've been in the legislative process since 1982, Madam Chairman, working with colleagues on both sides of the aisle to reach common sense compromises, and never once have I ever had a perfect bill before me. I don't know what a perfect bill even looks like, but I know when I decide to vote for a bill that I ask myself three things. Will this improve the quality of life for my constituents? Is it better than the status quo? And have we worked as hard as we can to preserve our core beliefs? For me, CSIA is a yes on all three of those.
Today, the bill has support from 9 Republicans and 8 Democrats. The strong bipartisan support makes any chance of passage significantly more likely. Some environmental groups say the Toxic Chemical Safety Act is so outdated that getting any kind of reform passed is a step in the right direction. But there's plenty of opposition. Senator Barbara Boxer, a Democrat from California, has teamed with the Democratic Senator from Massachusetts, Ed Markey, in drafting a competing bill that would extend more health protections. But that bill has no Republican support. Among the issues Boxer and Markey, as well as a substantial collection of other groups, take with Manchin and Capito's bill are revisions to the existing chemical law that preempt state laws. Senator Barbara Boxer is a prominent member of the Environment and Public Works Committee. She spoke during the meeting last week.
I've never seen in all the years I've been here such opposition to legislation. And the reason really is summed up by Mr. Tom McGarrity of the University of Texas, a leading legal scholar on environmental law, who said the Vitter-Udall-Inhofe bill will not make it easier for EPA to regulate toxic substances when considered in light of its aggressive preemption of state law that would actually remove existing protections in many states. The bill is actually worse than the existing statute.
Boxer and others at the meeting went on to explain that the new bill stipulates that once the EPA would deem a chemical a high priority, states would have to wait for that agency to regulate the chemical, a process that could take years. Opponents like Boxer argue that chemical manufacturers could stave off regulation indefinitely in this way. Neither Manchin nor Capito responded definitively to questions recently about whether they would support changes to the current legislation. Both have strong ties to the petrochemical industry and are the top recipients of chemical industry campaign contributions, according to data collected by the Federal Ethics Commission. The bill to overhaul the existing 40-year-old chemical law remains in committee for the time being. It hasn't yet been referred back to the Senate. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Glynis Board in Morgantown.
And Freedom Industries is set to answer to a pollution charge stemming from last year's chemical spill in Charleston. Federal prosecutors say the company is expected to plead guilty at a court hearing today. This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:49. Partly cloudy skies today, temperatures in the 40s and 50s. There's a chance of rain or snow tonight with lows in the 30s and low 40s. A chance of rain on Tuesday night, and on Wednesday. Highs Tuesday in the 40s and 50s, highs Wednesday in the 60s and low 70s.
Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by the New River Gorge Regional Development Authority, working to diversify the economy in the New River Gorge region of West Virginia. Information at nrgrda.org.
In May, farmers across West Virginia will be officially forming a new Association of Maple Syrup Producers. The group is working to grow the industry and to get the state on the USDA's list of top producers in the United States. This past weekend, the community of Pickens, West Virginia, celebrated the 31st annual Maple Syrup Festival. Before the festival, Roxy Todd visited one of the nearby maple syrup farmers, Don Olson, to talk about the challenges that he says are facing maple syrup production on his farm.
It was a warm day when I visited the Blue Rock Farm. The sunlight poured through the sugar maple trees, and the temperature was in the 60s. The sap was hardly flowing.
This year, you kind of started the process when?
Later than ever, I think. March 3rd. We have started before in January, but usually sometime in February. But
so how do you know? What's the moment?
When the weather starts warming up a little bit. When the trees actually start running, but you kind of know the cold at night, but gets warm in the daytime. That's when they'll start running. And that didn't happen during February this year. It just stayed cold all the time. So I'm just sitting there waiting.
If this year there's a cold, wintry February, but then like all of a sudden, I mean, March is almost come and gone, and now there's so much warmth. So could that mean that your season's actually shorter this year?
Oh, yes, it certainly could. That's what I'm worried about, that it's going to be real short. But then lately I look at the 10-day weather forecast, and there's plenty cold weather coming up, so at least we got 10 more days. That's all I can say. But it certainly could be. It could be a disastrous year like that, late winter and early spring.
Those extremely cold temperatures during February, they made it impossible for Olson to tap his maple syrup trees.
Those polar vortexes and those cold blasts of Arctic air do get down here. The last couple of years, they certainly have.
On good years, Olson's maple trees have produced about 400 gallons of syrup. But on a year like this, he might produce as little as 200 gallons. This year, Olson is also working with a group of maple syrup farmers to form a new group, the West Virginia Maple Syrup Producers Association. They'll be working to grow the industry by holding workshops, applying for farming grants, and branding West Virginia maple syrup. One of the group's first goals is to get the attention of the USDA, which only surveys the top 10 producing states. The West Virginia maple producers want to show that they belong in the top 10.
West Virginia has not been on that list, but it certainly could, as far as having enough, there's enough maple trees here if more people would be tapping them that West Virginia would be in that top 10, and there's a little local pride that people want to get on that list.
Cindy Martell works for the West Virginia Department of Agriculture. She's working directly to help the maple syrup producers form the new association.
Essentially, if we can go ahead and work collectively and build a brand, that's what we're hoping for, is that maple syrup production ends up making an economic impact on the state, because we know we have the potential based on the number of untapped resources, but also in terms of, you know, adding revenue to farmers. You know, when we're sugaring, that's in February, March, April. Those are great times. Because we're not doing other things on the farm, or we're getting ready to farm, and makes that income distribution throughout the year a little more even.
Maple syrup farmers in West Virginia, like Don Olson, certainly aren't having any problem finding buyers for their syrup. Olson says that the demand far exceeds his production.
We're not trying to track down every little venue we could sell it to anymore. Local people just put in their orders. You know, a lot of people say, I want two gallons this spring. You know, they plan ahead. They want, that's the supply for the year for them.
One of his main challenges right now is meeting that demand. He says that with the last two winters giving him a much shorter season, he just hasn't produced as much as he'd like. But lately, he's had a more pressing threat to his farm. A letter arrived in the mail recently from Dominion Energy.
That's the letter. They want a survey through here.
Dominion Energy has proposed a high-pressure pipeline called the Atlantic Coast Pipeline that would transport natural gas to markets in North Carolina. They want Olson's permission to survey his property.
To which I've told them no. And next step, I suppose, would be what they'd use, eminent domain of some kind, if they can get away with that, to where they could survey through here.
Chet Wade is a spokesperson for Dominion Energy.
In some cases, we've been able to work with landowners to adjust the route because they've been able to identify for us certain key features of their property.
But Don Olson worries that his small maple syrup farm would be utterly destroyed if a 42-inch pipeline were built on his property. We walk through his forest, and he shows me the 40-year-old maple trees. Plastic tubing crisscrosses and follows a line down to his sugar house. He's using the money he makes during the syrup season to build a retirement fund.
And it just occurred to me, well, maybe these trees are that for me. And it kind of worked out, you know. I'm about retirement age, and now I've got an income from these trees. No 401ks still, but but the trees are helping out.
But that retirement money is entirely dependent on these trees. If they were removed to make room for a right-of-way for the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, it would take decades for new trees to grow back. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Roxy Todd in Blue Rock.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.